thank you for joining us here today. I am here with Ism Dart, a local Valley favorite. We're just going to kind of have a conversation and discuss what's going on in his life and ask him a few questions about things that he is involved with here in the Valley and with youth and community services. So we're going to get started.
I'm so intrigued by this, lured by the beauty of your brownness, how the sun dresses your softness. I caress and contemplate on thoughts of us taking on each other's touch. I'm so intrigued by this, lured by the beauty of your brownness, how the sun dresses your softness. I caress and contemplate on thoughts of us taking on each other's touch. Said a song or two about you.
How you doing? I'm missing the conversation and kissing of minds. And time had you flying, you just passed me by, but your smile flashed me in the black with my confined, fixated eye. Was you just attracted to your physical beauty? But I dig the way your words flow so loosely, like your mind is working at ease. While others often say things to offend me and lie
about your chocolate kids.
I'm this you.
Are you going to give everyone your AKA without knowing you asked for pretty much all our lives? Billy Graham, yeah, I mean, I go by those still. I don't just go by Ism Dart, I go by Billy Graham as well. I use that as a professional thing, like when I do workshop, stuff like that. Definitely can't go into a workshop talking about Ism Dart, you know, for a professional,
right, you know, for a professional audience.
So, but, adopted Ism just like about three years ago.
3 years ago. Okay, so of course we're all curious about the Ism Dart.
It came from
Give it to me piece by piece, Ism.
That's it, okay, Ism. Alright. Basically where it came from is that Professor Matthew Whitaker, right, ASU, black professor, historian there.
Okay.
Well, he was giving a dissertation one day and he was talking about the different pioneers and stuff that came through AZ, gave us back in the day 18th century, early 18th century names. And one of the names he dropped was Ism Dart.
D-A-R-T?
D-A-R-T.
Okay.
And Ism Dart was a, he was a cowboy, real quick tongue.
A brother?
Yeah, his brother. Yeah, he was giving all black history.
Here in Arizona.
Here in Arizona.
Okay, I have to look that one up. People, you have to look that one up.
Yeah, right. You look it up. Matter of fact, you could only find, like, if you Google it or something like that, you could only find so much information on it through Google. You actually have to go through
research.
Yeah, old school research. You have to do old school research to find.
So y'all who are not comfortable with hitting the library, here's y'all experience.
If you want to, but basically, you know, so after hearing that, and I kind of said, okay, yeah, I kind of liked it. And then one day I was actually going through names. I'm not sure if I'm saying right, the Calvarian philosophy.
Now you said you were going through names. Are you looking for a stage name?
No, I was actually going through names, and I just happened to put in, I just put in ism to see what came up.
Right.
And the root word was the root name of it was Isimo, I-S-I-M-O. And all the characteristics of it, you look that up. And I don't want to tell everybody my characteristics. They give you good stuff and
point?
The bad stuff. But it was on point.
All of it. Good and bad.
It was on point.
Okay.
But the other thing about that, though, is as I grow, I may end up changing my name because of some of the things that it said about the name, which were part of me then, but I'm trying to change now. So, you know what I'm saying? It actually may come into something.
Can you give us an example of one of those things?
One of the things was basically, it said I had a whole lot, I had talent and gifts, but I often doubted myself so much that I doubted myself out of a whole lot of things.
So, and that was true.
It was very true, you know. I just let go. Because I was like, maybe I can't do it.
You know, it's possible,
but, you know, do I really want to do it? You know, self-doubt, a whole lot of self-doubt. And it affected me as a performer, you know what I'm saying? And even still to this day, it can.
Right. So I want to come back to that. So how did you get the, when did you decide to go with the Ism Dark?
Shortly after I seen that, I was like, okay, there it is.
You know,
that's me.
Right.
You know, so I started going with it. And of course, you know, immediately when people see me, because I'm a dark skinned brother.
Right.
People's like,
Ism. We'll have a picture of him online. So I got my camera, y'all. Because I know the sisters are wondering.
They're like, Ism Dark. And then and somebody will say, yes, he is.
Right.
You know, so it became a question. A whole lot of people actually still pronounce my name as a question.
Okay, I feel real stupid right now because I never thought about it like that. I thought about it always as a statement as opposed to.
Yeah, but
that's,
trust me,
that's interesting.
And it happens a whole lot of times. Like when you go to, like, you know to
other
venues.
So I'm going to start following you around town just so I can call back. Uh-huh. Yes, he is.
Yeah, because they say, you know, Ism. Ism Dark? Like, well, damn, is it a clown?
So you took the name upon yourself.
Yeah, I took the name upon myself.
Started. Yeah, were you already performing at that time?
I had already started performing. I started performing at, my first time out was in 97. As a poet in the Cafe Mahogany in Detroit, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of my first times out, actually, this guy seen me, and he was a promoter for The Last Poets.
Okay.
And he offered me to come and open up for the show.
Okay.
And, except, you know, after that or whatever, you know, I opened up for The Last Poets. I really even didn't have a whole lot of knowledge as far as who they were at that time.
Right.
And,
had you been following the poetry scene up until that point?
Okay. No, it was just, I heard people were doing poetry. I went up to Cafe Mahogany a few times.
Mm.
I said, I'm going to hop up there one day.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about this Cafe Mahogany.
Cafe Mahogany. It's
anything like that here in the Valley?
The closest thing used to be Livingston's.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no more Cafe Mahogany even there.
Really?
But basically, it's the same type of vibe. It can still be created. And we, you know, a vibe is really anything can be created even within somebody's living room.
Right.
It's this particular vibe. And it's just a vibe of love. It's almost like church in a sense. You know, mm-hmm. people go up. And they do their thing, and no matter good, bad, indifferent, whatever, you know, you still show them love.
Right.
Because basically it's the whole thing of just getting stuff off your chest.
So is that what possessed you to get up on stage that night? Did you just have some stuff you needed to let loose?
Well, I had been writing. I had started writing what I called ghetto poetry.
Uh-huh. Before,
and it was my ghetto love poetry. Because,
right.
You know, I had a girlfriend who lived far away. And so we used to text each other, but email each other back and forth.
Electronic ghetto mail.
Yeah,
poetry.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, so I had, like, some, you know, some ghetto stuff. But then actually I started getting, you know, these different ideas. Very different from what everybody else was doing as far as I had heard. And I just started doing them. You know, I just started, you know, just writing everything that came to my head.
Right.
You know, and I think it really sparked from there. I had written before, but not as a spoken word artist, not as a poet.
Right.
Performing. Yeah.
So that first night, how'd you get the courage? What happened?
The first night, basically, like I said, it was a place of love. So I mean, they had this thing, and actually, I brought it here too. And it's called Spontaneous Combustion.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you weren't part of the set that night, this it was a young lady, I forgot her name. She would walk around with the mic, and they would have a topic.
Right.
And she would flow, whatever, and she'd get right in your face and put the mic in your face.
Right.
You gotta say something.
I would have stopped. I would have stopped running.
So that's the type of place it was.
Right.
You know, it was like an all inclusive.
Pressure.
You know, you give love. You know?
Right.
And so, I mean, like, the first time I went up, it was almost easy. It was almost easy because nobody knew me. You know what I'm saying? I had just moved back to Detroit. You know, I just moved back there. So nobody knew me.
Mm.
And, you know, and...
You already had your bags packed to come back to Arizona in case you didn't work out.
No, well, I mean, I went out there for school, though. So, you know, nobody really knew me or whatever. Then the pieces I dropped, one was a...
That night? That first night?
Yeah, the first night, the pieces I did, one was called One Night Stand. That's on CD. Plug.
While we're at it, so I don't forget, because I'm not a professional at this, where can we get the CD?
You can get the CD at cdbaby.com.
I heard that, and you can pretty much download most of it, right? Some
clippets
in there? Okay.
Yeah, there's a few that's downloadable, but the whole CD is 17 tracks.
Okay.
So it's
and I heard that, and that's what reminded me of an old friend from school, and I was like, I have to find him.
Yeah, so that, you get it that way, you know, any shows or whatever that we do, I usually try to carry product with me. And One Night Stand was basically from an early experience in Detroit, just realizing the type of mentality that was out there as far as, you know, the cars, the money, the you know, who goes after who and all that type of thing.
Materialistic type of thing.
Yeah. So So I did that piece. That was one of my first pieces I ever did.
And so what kind of response did you get?
I got a very good response.
Were you surprised?
I was very surprised.
Okay, so you have to take me through this. You get on stage. Are you getting dry mouth? Are you sweating?
No. I got on stage, sat down on the stool. A good thing I hadn't drank that night, because I found out like a few weeks later if I drank, it didn't come out the same.
So, bad experience.
Yes, that was
a bad experience. We're going to have to find a tape on that one.
So, but I did, got up, you know, just... basically just and I read it because I didn't memorize anything,
right.
I read it and got a very good response, and really good responses all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the place I think that made Cafe Mahogany so great.
Right.
They basically was so engaging, you know what I'm
right.
saying? People respond to you like all the way through your piece, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really find that, you know. And really I think the only other people that really require for that is probably the comedians, you know. They're the only people that really goes, you know, off of that, you know, every single time. But yeah, so after that experience, you know, I didn't even really take it, you know, even after performing the last performance, I didn't take it seriously. I just thought, okay, this is just something else I can do.
Right.
You know, and, you know, going through school, I went through college or whatever, came back out here, got a job.
You didn't perform again?
I was still performing
just casually.
on and off casually. I had never really sat back on a main stage and stuff like that.
But did you begin to study and hone your skills? I'm not a poet, so I don't really understand.
Oh, okay.
Is there a way to get ready for it? And...
yeah, well, see, I once I started writing, I continued to write.
Okay.
I never really stopped writing, and that's what I tell all poets. You know, if you're a poet, you write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best thing you can do is, no matter what's on your mind, write. It might not be, you know, a whole lot that you're writing. You know, it might not even be very substantive as far as, you know, putting in a book and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But you still have something, you know, and you're still getting that experience. So, you know, I continued to write. I would still, like, you know, go out to the spot sometime and just listen a whole
right.
lot of times. And that's another thing. You have no want to listen to poetry if you want to perform poetry,
right.
you know.
Do you find that it affects your style ever, or did it in the beginning?
What, just writing?
Listening to others.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, listen to others definitely affects your style. Because, and even like you see somebody just blow the mic completely out, when
right.
they just do it,
right.
it just gives you this thing like, you know, well, I'm just going to come out and just do my stuff. You
right.
know? And sometimes you'll see even somebody odd hop up to the mic. And the odd thing about it is just everybody in the whole audience don't know where they are with it.
Right.
You know, but they're so much into what they're doing.
Right.
They don't give a damn where they are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, they were still good. They were all the way there to what they were supposed to be,
right.
you know, for that particular moment. And to me, I think that's what I really gained from watching a whole lot of poets. I love watching poets that, or performers.
Mm-hmm.
I love performances, period. And I love to see people perform to their utmost.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even believe it's even a person doing it anymore.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, you see way beyond the person.
You're starting to feel the words.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know? So that's, you know, that's how I watch them. You know, I watch for that.
Right.
You know, I don't really do too many quotes,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my poetry. I don't do a whole lot of similes, you know.
Now, like, are there different styles in poetry? And I don't want to just say the things that are out of the textbook, but I mean the stuff that's going on in cafes across the country.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there are different styles of poetry, but you're right. The textbook, I don't even, I mean, yeah, if you're a
classic,
how can I say?
You can
you're
say classic.
Yeah, you're
contemporary,
classic,
traditional.
Or basically, you truly want to take the writing portion of it and take it to a whole different level and all those types of things. I mean, I'm a poet in a sense that basically I put together words to say what's on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you ask me about all the different structures of poetry, yeah, I can probably tell you this and that, but do I actually use all those when writing or try to include them? No.
Right. Okay.
No, I just write basically what's on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except as you travel, especially, you see the different styles of poetry, you know, you see, you know, the especially in slam poetry,
right.
There's so many different styles of poetry to hit that stage.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to a conference and you can sit there for 2 days and you won't hear a repeat of a poem.
Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're saying geographically you can find different styles. That's
yeah.
something, I mean, I guess that's logical, just like with music.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have, and you know, even like as far as what they put the poetry with, you know, as far as, you know, performance poetry and stuff like that, you know, what they put the poetry with.
Now, what do you describe, what's your definition of performance poetry?
There's slam poets, there's performance poets, then there's just, to me, just writing writers, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
In a sense, they're poets, but they're, you know, they're better on paper than performing.
Okay.
It's just not that interesting when
mm-hmm.
they perform.
Right.
You know? But to me, a performance poet is a person who takes to the stage, and basically when they're on that stage, that's right. their work right okay. there, you know.
Okay.
And a whole lot, but the crossover is, can you be both? You know, can you actually take a piece on stage, put it on paper, and make it mean as much on paper? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's truly and that's the real challenge, because I truly don't even believe a whole lot of people who call themselves performance poets can even do that.
Right.
But, you know what I'm saying? But.
So is that something that you've practiced and it's helped you work through that, being able to get your message across on paper?
Oh, yeah.
With the strength that you do verbally?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Performance is a big part of mine. I believe so. The recording thing, you know, I like the CD production, but truly what I truly like, I like the stage. I like
right.
the stage and the actual performance better than almost any of it, because mm-hmm. you feel different things at different times, and there's always a different connection to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like to feed off of. I like that energy. But also as a performance poet, though, or as an artist, period, sometimes, you know, you're still reluctant to perform sometimes, you know. Especially as a poet, because sometimes everything you have to say may not be everything people want to hear.
Right.
Except that's your challenge as a poet. And I often challenge people, you know, if there's something that you feel indifferent about, if there's something that you just don't like, you know, I mean, instead of, you know, boycotting and banning it and all that
right.
kind of stuff, find a way to actually be included in it to make some changes.
Right.
And that's, I think, the job of the poets are now. You know, a whole lot of us, we don't like hip-hop. You know, we don't like the way the hip-hop is going, should
right.
I say. We love hip-hop.
Right.
We don't like rap.
Right.
We don't like the way that the rap is included with hip-hop and the way it's going
right.
a whole lot of times. So, but I think our challenge now is that we have to not let it go, but reclaim it. You know what I'm saying? We have to do what they're doing, but we got to do it better. And we got to put a positive message with it. So you got to do it two times better. Because no one really wants to support the positive message. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because usually a positive message is going to mean somebody's not going to get the money they were going to get, you know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
you know, because we're, you know, I mean, everything follows money.
So you mentioned hip hop. So a lot of people would feel that hip hop really isn't anything different than poetry to music. So how would you address that? How do you find, let's say if you're on stage and you're performing mm-hmm. and you have music in the background, what differentiates you from a
hip hop artist,
right?
One thing, well, if you want to talk about it, like technically, hip hop almost always follows the beat, follows a beat pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hip hop always follows a beat pattern.
Right.
Poetry is more free flow. You fluctuate with certain beats,
right.
but it's still a freer flow. You know what I'm saying? You're not held in a box so much. But really, the biggest part of hip hop that I really see as that poetry can really fall into is basically the influence. And what I mean by that, see, hip-hop was built, and it was supposed to have a end of it where it said, that says, okay, the critics have a big voice
right.
in what's good and what's not good.
Right.
Well, that's not true anymore. You
right.
know what I'm saying? Because, of course, money outweighs somebody's opinion.
Well, it's right.
So, you know, so what's happening now is you have all these big-name artists, and they sitting on top, but basically, you know what I'm saying, and they're sitting on top because of money. And then a thing of critics and opinions and things of that sort has been pushed to the wayside. So now, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, we as poets, we have to do something to counter that. We have to put messages out there. I mean, we say, you know, we don't want them listening to, you know, 50 or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, what else do we give them to listen to?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I even encourage, you know, snatching people's beats. If somebody got a hot beat,
right.
you
let's
know,
use
snatch,
that.
Snatch their beat and flip it.
Because it's
gonna,
it may
yeah,
bring
yeah,
some audience
yeah,
to
exactly.
you who may not normally listen to you.
Yeah, so I mean, you know. I mean, if there's a whole lot of areas to be done, to be touched in hip hop, and truly, hip hop is nowhere near what it was made for. It was made to tell our story.
Do you think though there was this point in our young adult lives, growing through high school, where hip hop was that?
Oh yeah.
It was at that point.
Oh yeah. Oh,
you remember those
yeah.
days, right?
Hip hop was it was because one, we would always use it to say things that were encouraging.
Right.
I mean, I can remember a song we had in high school. You know, we was a step team. But, yeah,
right.
we'd go out and we'd do this song. G
I might have some old video, y'all.
G use a dud if you smoking that bud. You know
right.
what I'm saying? So, you have hip-hop was there.
Right.
You know, but it was used as a positive influence. Almost every I mean, should I say, besides sexual, because sexual is one of those areas or whatever that's
human nature, right.
Has always been there.
Right, yeah, we'll be there.
We'll be there. So, I mean, but besides that or whatever, I can really say that, you know, our messages were much different. We didn't have no, you know, let's hang out all day and, you know, smoke weed and, you know.
We got the biggest rims.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. We didn't do all that.
So, do you feel, though, that, what do you feel caused that shift? Do you think it was the money, the commercialism?
Well, yeah, exactly. It was the industry seeing how much money can be made.
So what are you going to do as a poet to prevent that?
See, you can't do anything about money.
Right.
You can't do anything as far as, I mean, yes, you can.
Right.
But you truly can't, because basically if somebody's making a dollar, you can't tell them not to make their dollar.
True.
You know, but on the other hand with poetry, what you can do is you can expose those things.
Right.
You know, and you can also hopefully give somebody some more input, you know.
So how do you find that balance in getting the word out there, letting the public know about the poets that are out there and the things that you guys are doing, but at the same time without getting to the point where you're being exploited?
Oh, wow.
It's a tough balance, yeah. I think that's a tough balance with anything.
Well, here's one thing that we have done. I can actually say a whole lot of poets are becoming more business minded.
Right.
And basically they're real, because we've done shows with Music Soul Child. We've done shows with Erykah Badu. You see what I'm saying? So we do these types of shows, so we know there is some value in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But a whole lot of times, like you said, people always call about, you know, exposure and, you know, and really they're just exploiting. I think to become more business minded, to draw up things that's going to basically, I don't want to say benefit, because that's, you know what I'm saying, because it is going to benefit one or the other, but I can't say, but a benefit is to benefit everyone, in a sense, because basically, if you truly want to remain able to really voice what you want to say, there can't be, I mean, you can't go against your employer. You know what I'm saying? You can't go against, you know what I'm saying, the people who are paying you and things of that sort. So to build an economic base, some kind of way, to where you know, okay, no matter what, we can still do our word and we ain't gonna get hit over the head for it. You know, so that's like the first thing. I think that's been done. You know, you have Divine Essence. She's been doing her thing for a while.
Yeah.
You know, you have Wisdom, who, you know, with the Bible Wisdom. She's been doing her thing. Now we have Black Poet Ventures. And it's a, you know, it's a collection of people who are coming together for the purpose of making sure that poets aren't treated just any type of way.
Right.
And it's also make sure everybody's, it's an all-inclusive
type
thing. And it doesn't shut anybody out.
That's
you
true.
Know? So, I mean, I think those are the biggest things right now. And also finding a way to make money from what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have arts organizations, you have people that work in schools, you know, you have basically a whole lot of different places you can go do things, or even to be creative enough to put together something that if you're not getting paid off the front end, you're getting paid off the back end.
Right.
You know, so I mean, you have to juggle around all these different ideas.
Are there any promoters in the Valley who just focused on the community, on your community, on poets and things like that? Are you guys working on a tour, or would you like someone to give y'all a call who's looking to?
Well, you know, we are, because we have been, we have been hit from different people. I'm not saying that.
I don't have any money to get sued.
We've been hit from different folks,
right?
Basically, regarding shows and stuff like that, and the bad thing about dealing with people sometimes is basically people. You got to remember, sometimes people are in it, and they have a dollar figure they're trying to make, or you know what I'm saying, something like that.
Mm.
And if we have to wait on those opportunities to say something,
right?
As poets, we haven't done our jobs, you know. But I don't know. There is a balance. There
tough
is a balance,
balance.
You know.
Are there any current, we know we have, I apologize for my ignorance here, but there's HBO.
Okay.
Are there any deaf poetry? Right. I don't know if that's still going on. But is there anything similar like that in the nation right now where they're nationally touring?
Well, you have individuals that do tours. But usually when poets set out to do tours, they do it on their own.
Right.
It's just an individual, you know, popping up. I mean, some people have agents and they have things of that sort, but you don't really have any poetry companies outside of deaf poetry. You have some individuals like Talia Macy, which puts together different things in different cities.
Right.
And they tour that way. But, you know, really, deaf poetry is wonderful. I love it. I love it simply because it opens people's minds to see that that's out there.
Right.
But one thing that I don't like about deaf poetry, because people think that you have to be on deaf poetry in order to be a deaf poet, to be a poet,
right.
You know,
right.
or to have some meaning behind what you do, and that's not right. That's not true, because deaf poetry is you see one poem,
right?
You see them drop one poem. That doesn't make them a poet,
right?
I mean, anybody can perform one piece,
and
it
may have been a poem that they've been cleaning up
exactly.
and practicing for
exactly.
for some time.
You know?
I think that's a struggle with any artist is if you're not in the limelight. You're not validated. You don't get the
exactly.
validation that you sometimes deserve. And sometimes, like I told you earlier, I'm on this hustle and flow kick. But sometimes it's the people who are like in the background, you know, or underground rather, mm-hmm. doing their thing that's really driving it. How do you feel? Do you feel that the support and the, the community has grown in your following since?
It's grown
or stayed static.
Because see what usually happens when you talk about poetry. I mean, if you really truly one thing that we need as poets right now is we need a home to call our home that it can't be snatched because of we're not making bar tabs and stuff like that.
Right.
And that's one big thing that we deal with because you know it's you know once again you know they have to make their money but
right.
poetry isn't going to bring in. Hopefully, a whole lot of drinkers, unless
right.
they're listening, hopefully, you know, finding something in the words. So that's, you know, that's one thing we often struggle with, and I think that's what makes the poetry scene so up and down. But we have managed to lock in some scenes that have been growing.
Supportive.
That have been growing, but it still hasn't been to even... I say we still haven't hit the height of what it used to be.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So
right.
basically, it can still build back up to get there. But once we get there, the question is, you know, okay, now what's next? You know, so now what's next, and how do we keep those people there? Because you know, you're talking about you coming out to the same venue every week and all that kind of stuff. And so you know, there's the ideas in the working as far as you know, keep them there. But that's one main thing we have to do now is find a home.
You need a
you know,
home.
Someplace that.
Hey, y'all homeless.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we're out here in the park right now, so.
So you see
the birds? Right. No sound effects going on. I wanted to talk to you. I know you have a lot going on in your life right now, and since I've known you in high school, you've even been a teenager. You've done a lot with the youth, walking around like a grown man, you know, working with the youth, the people that were the same age as yourself. What are you currently doing right now to give back to the community? Because I think that's an important part in everyone's lives.
Oh, definitely. That's to me, that's the first work, you know, honestly, because... you know, I've tried other things, you know what I'm saying? I've done the road thing. I've been out there like that. But there's nothing as rewarding as actually seeing someone that was under your mentorship that, you know, they make it to that next level.
You got some shout-outs you want to give us?
They love you, boy! I mean, you know, the Kids at Life Skills Center, you know. I have a whole lot of kids that I work with at Premier High School, mm-hmm. Career Success. You know, and these kids basically, they have, you know, it's a life skills program that we do, and they come in, and whole life kids, you know, they have a lot of life stories, you know,
right.
but, and sometimes it's unbelievable almost.
Don't you find that, and maybe I'm being a little biased when I say this, that I find that youth or anyone who's gone through something traumatic or difficult times in their life, that they end up being the best writers. These kids are so talented.
Oh, yeah.
They have so much that they need to say. They've seen so many things in their lives, and then you just give them a pen and paper or you know, some ink, and they're just they blow up.
Yeah, one of the programs we do, we actually engage kids in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have them writing about completely anything you can think of.
Right.
They're writing about it. And out of these writings, you're right, we do have some writings that you would think professional writers
right.
have put together.
Right.
And mostly because they have those life experiences. But what I would, you know, still, like I said, you know, my work with youth is, I don't know, it's like lifelong in a sense, you know, mm-hmm. it's lifelong because, you know, I mean, I know, you know, I grew up out here, spent most of my life in South Phoenix, Central Phoenix, you know, Phoenix in general. And so, you know, I mean, I know a whole lot of people, but, you know, in the same sense, can you still see those same people? And it's 10 years later and those people are still in the same spot, you know? I mean, what good is it for one person to strive and, you know what I'm right. saying, and not be able to reach back and teach and all that kind of stuff? So to me, I think that's what it's truly about, you know? It's truly about getting another generation to a whole different level. And then basically, so everything that's been done in the past as far as bad-wise, you know, hopefully in the next generation or so, there's a whole lot of things out there we can fix.
Right.
You know, we can fix and we can be successful. We can be, you know.
Well, I have to say, I know you've done a lot in the community, and I thank you, if no one else has thanked you for, you know, spending time with the youth who are in need, and even adults and who just don't know. What advice would you give to young adults who are looking to get into the poetry scene? Or even older adults who just don't know where to get the courage to get up on stage, where to find you all?
Just find a spot. If you find any spot, and really, and that's the whole thing. Or if you haven't ever read your stuff, get in the mirror and read to yourself. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Read your stuff, because a whole lot of times what we don't realize is a whole lot of things we write is solution to the things we're going through.
Right.
You know, but you know, we don't even take time a whole lot of time to really study what we write, and sometimes, because I truly believe we get revelation mm-hmm. through writing, and sometimes that pen hits that paper or you type it up and you're not thinking about it. But if you look back later and you look at it, you're like, what the hell? You know, this made a difference, or it could have made a difference. I can reshape from this. So, but the first thing to do is just to start to write, and then to read. Just read it to somebody. Get on the phone and read it to a friend. You know.
As a poet, I know that I'm a sensitive person, and it's hard to take constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. I'm not an artist by any means, so sometimes it's hard for me to understand where artists come from and how people react to your work. Do you find that difficult? How do you accept constructive criticism and actually take it and grow from that, as opposed to, I know there's sometimes there's a difference in knowing where somebody's coming at you, where they're coming from when they're telling you, you know, look, you need to do this or you need to do that. Sometimes it's from a negative point and they're just hating. And then sometimes it's, you know, just trying to gear you in the right direction and polish your skills a little bit.
Yeah. I think to have honest friends, but also friends first, because a friend's not going to stab you. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're not going to kick you while you're down. So if something happens, in a sense, you know what I'm saying, and that mistake or glitch or whatever else, it costed you something. You know, they're not going to kick you about it. But what I found, like I have a theater mentor, and I've been on here for years, and what I found is basically he can say things to me, and it doesn't offend me at all.
Right.
You know, because I know it's for my growth. As if someone was just to walk up to me and I don't know them, then they say things. But as an artist, you can't go off on them either. You know, you have to balance those things out as well. And so to have a few people around you that you know is trying to grow you, grow you up, you know, and then grow you up.
I'm glad you say that though, because have you ever had a piece where you're just, you loved it. Uh-huh. You thought this was just the best piece of, you know what, that you've ever written. And you were just going to get on stage and share it. And you shared it with someone prior to getting on stage. And it's like, I don't know, Ism. And how did you make that decision? Do you follow your heart? Or sometimes does the outside voice come in and take over?
Usually, I've tried it both ways. and usually, my thought is better than theirs.
Y'all catch that?
well, because, you know, I mean, you know, to take a special request to perform is different than, you know, like if you, and usually I don't even read new pieces for individuals. They hear it the first time when I get on stage.
Right.
And
why
a reason,
is that? Because
if I let them hear it before, and even if they give me a smirk, I won't do it.
Right.
Period.
Right.
You know, so the whole thing is, once again, to just do it. Because I am definitely an artist in that sense. I usually don't even ask for people's opinions.
Right.
Because I don't truly want to hear anything bad.
Right.
You know, but there are a few people that I will ask their opinion of.
Right.
And I would take them to heart. But it also depends on the approach. If somebody is sincere, like I remember one time I did a slam, and basically I withdrew a whole lot from the slam because I didn't feel like the audience there was can really relate to what I was saying.
Right.
You know? Just blank play. It wasn't any black faces in audience. Right. I'm black. Right. You know, so you know, and it's a slam. So basically people are judging you on what you're saying.
Right.
And so it's already that factor there. But afterwards I had a young lady approach me and she had told me, you know, as a mom, you know, you don't, you know, you see those faces and you withdraw. You know, you withdraw, and whatever reason it is, whatever, you know, you got to get past that. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's, you know, do your thing.
So you've taken that advice with you.
Yeah. And at first I was like, no, I don't withdraw, something, you know, but I didn't tell her that.
Right.
But I was thinking it.
Yeah, all the way home in your car.
But then my whole thing is, why would she tell me that? You know what I'm saying? And to me, truly, if someone respects you as an artist, or they like your work and stuff, they're going to tell you certain things. And you, as an artist, you should respect that, because, you know, those are the people who actually shape you.
And that's part of the growth.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So back to the growth. So the name Ism Dark. Uh-huh. What are some of the things that you're working on right now? How are you different from Ism Dark? What have you developed into?
Well, one thing, I mean, I went through a time in my life where I just, it felt like everything was downhill, you know, and matter of fact, it wasn't too far from now, you know what I'm saying, but, you know, so through that time, though, it's a whole lot of things I just had to realize about myself, just, you know, and even being in a gutter, in a sense, you know what I'm saying.
We're gonna hold on, we got a helicopter over here, y'all.
You're looking for me, I gotta go.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
For instance, like I was traveling, and at the time I was traveling, so many things were going wrong at home that I was truly homeless in a sense, because I didn't have a home, and so much had went on, but yet to pull yourself up on a stage, because you got to do it, you're already there, and to do those things, it develops you into a whole different person, because now you realize that it don't matter what I have on, it doesn't matter, you know what I'm saying, how I'm feeling at this moment, I still have to perform, you know, and to draw those things out of you. When you, especially when you're going through them, a few of my pieces are, you know, life pieces, you know, when you're going through those things and I have to actually get up there and talk about them, you know, it's a whole different ball game, you know, and so in doing that, I grew a whole lot.
Stronger?
I grew so much stronger, yeah. You know, so much stronger, you know, and I stopped talking myself out of doing things, you know what I'm saying? I stopped doubting myself as much, because, you know, there's still things, you know, that I still have doubts about, as, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to things, because everybody doesn't have the same vision as you.
Tell me about the courage and the sacrifice. I know, I don't know how many of you listening are aware, but this is all that Billy does. He's an artist full time, and we have to respect him for that. And I know a lot of time people are artists and they don't take that step to go out on a limb and leave their secure 9-to-5 with the 401k and medical and benefits.
Hold on, you got an application?
So tell me, what was that day that you went in and you were just like, I'm done. I'm moving out on my own.
There was a whole lot of different aspirations I had. I was working, and basically I seen my job as definitely, it wasn't dead end, but it was dead end.
Was it draining you emotionally and affecting your work?
Yeah, it was draining me emotionally. It was a whole lot of other life circumstances came along with that as well. But basically, it just put me in a situation where I seen no matter what I was doing, I couldn't be happy doing that. You know, I couldn't be happy going there every day. I had a supervisor, and basically she called my bluff on a whole lot of things, right? Because, you know, actually I was going to go to law school. I was going to go to law school. But then, you know, she was like, well, you know, are you going to do it? And she was like, you ain't going to do it. You know, and she was calling my bluff. So I was like, well, damn, I got to do something. And right about the same time, you know, I had already been, you know, we had already been trying to put the spoken word thing together. But it's a hard gig. You know what I'm saying? It's a hard gig to actually make a living off of. Then I read an article in Spoken, what is it called? Spoken Visions.
A magazine, okay.
Yes, a magazine out of St. Louis. And they had an article in there, and it was talking about the full-time poets, and basically you can do it. And it was decent money doing it.
That's all you needed.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my thing to jump. That wasn't it, but it was a whole lot of other
stuff. Did you plan your jump?
No, what happened is basically, I had went out. I had went out of my job on stress, on stress. Like I said, just a lot of other stuff that was going on, or whatever. I was trying to get together, and then I, you know, and while out, I found peace, you know. I found right. peace, you know. And you know, and this is after the checks had already stopped coming, because I could have went back to work.
Right.
You know, I just wasn't getting a check for the work I wasn't doing anymore. So I could have went back to work, but why? You know, I mean, I found a peace about it. And basically, also, I did a whole lot of praying and meditating on it. And I was like, you know what? It's up to you. You know, it's up to you. I'm gonna follow it. I'm gonna do it. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I know you got me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So you had some faith.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You know,
so you're 2 years out, 2 years free.
Yeah.
Would you do anything differently? Because I know there's some people listening. And I was one of those people who jumped without looking around or asking for permission.
Would I do something differently? I could have planned a little better. But
right.
I understand life has never been a plan.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And planning has never really been in my favor a whole lot of times. You know, I can plan a whole lot of stuff. And basically, I'm still ending up last minute, you know, off the cuff.
Right.
A whole lot of times, because that's just the way life is sometimes when you're pushing towards something.
And a lot of times it can be a crutch.
Yeah,
a lot of
people
overplan.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You overplan and you fall apart. So when it happened that way, you know, I understand I had so much other stuff I was going through.
Right.
That basically the job, me leaving the job was I mean, it was like a weight lifted off me,
right.
But I still had several on me, you know what I'm saying, that I was still going through, you know, I was still going through family issues and all that kind of stuff, you know, so, you know, you have a whole lot of stuff to go through, you know, and that's one thing I think the jobs, and that was another reason, because I was like, okay, I'm at this job that's supposed to be with one of the greatest organizations in the world, you know, and basically, they can't get me support for something that I'm going through.
Right.
They don't give a damn about what I'm going through. And basically the only question they have is, you know what I'm saying, is when are you returning to work? You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, I'm going through things with my family, things of that sort. And to me, that truly was the severance point, because
how can you be productive there?
Yeah,
why would they want you there unproductive?
Exactly.
Shows that they don't care about the people that they're servicing either.
Yeah.
So what are you doing in the Valley? What do you have coming up here?
We have Between the Sheets coming out for adults only.
Tell us about Between the Sheets. This is year two.
Yeah. Between the Sheets, this is our second time performing. We did it in October. But it turned out wonderful. We had Talon Macy come out to feature for the first one, but this time we're doing all local performers.
Give us some names, and we're sorry if you forget anybody.
King Savior, Divine Sanders, Marcel Williams, Bobcat, C-Note, you know, we had some vocalists.
So about five or ten brothers?
DC Groove is the musical director for the show, and he's a musician on Round Town as well.
Local here?
All local. And basically, it's a show. It's Between the Sheets, you know. It does hit the erotic side
That's
of it,
okay.
But there's more to it. You know,
is there an age?
I would say you got to be at least 18.
Okay,
to come.
18 and over, folks.
There's no alcohol or anything like that. But you know, some of the topics we do hit, we do need a mature mind.
Okay.
And plus, you know, we have our venues we perform for kids.
Right.
You know, this is for adults.
This is grown folks, right?
Yeah. Also, I'm involved in a few other productions. Freedom Summer, which is a play about the civil rights movement.
And that will be showing?
That will be the 25th of February at the Carver Museum.
Okay.
And I'll be doing acting in that. So.
What role are you playing?
I'm playing the role of Martin. Not Martin Luther King. this is a composite character.
Okay.
That was created. But it's a real good story. It's basically like a love story between two high school students that were going into college, but they were both going to be involved in the civil rights movement, and it shows it from both of their sides, or mm-hmm. whatever. They're in two different places. I can't remember exactly where the two characters were at this time. Other things, working on a film with Iris Huey. She's doing another film, Second Chances.
When will that be out? Not sure.
June
of this year?
I think June is supposed to be hitting the shelves. I believe.
Okay.
That's a real good. Y'all want to check that out?
Okay.
Check it out. That's,
and she has Scratches previously to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scratches. If you haven't seen Scratches, check that out.
And the website for that is Scratches.
www.scratches.info.
.info. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And is that you got a pretty full summer?
Yeah. So exactly. So I'm pretty much busy all the way until about June, and also do, you know, the different workshops and stuff
right.
like that with community.
So where can they find more information about Between the Sheets?
Between the Sheets, you can go to blackpoetventures.com.
Okay.
And all the info is there. You can purchase tickets there. I think there should be a clip there from the last show now.
Oh.
It shows how it went down. So, you know, hey.
So, we'll be there. Is there going to be any interaction with the audience? Are we going to be expecting somebody coming off the stage for us?
Actually, you'll never know what to expect.
Okay, so you know you got some competition this weekend, because this is like the main event, round three at the Celebrity.
Yeah. Actually, the main event, we will probably be out there advertising for our show.
Ladies? Double hitter here, so we'll not that I'm biased. There.
We'll probably be out there. Actually, and the idea did spark as a lyrical male review. Because oftentimes, you know, brothers take off their clothes, but I mean, how many times do you actually know what they're thinking?
Who cares? You know? No, I'm just joking. I am just joking. Yeah, but I do care.
But truly, and it gives a whole nother side. Women love the show. Fellas really love the show because
they
can relate a whole lot.
So the show on February 14th, Valentine's Day.
14th and 15th.
14th and 15th is not just for the ladies.
No, it's not just for ladies.
All right.
Yeah.
So the fellas come out.
Fellas, you might want to
come. Buy your ladies a ticket.
If you don't got a lady, you might want to come.
Learn how to get a lady?
No, not learn how to get a lady.
Oh, there's going to be a ton of ladies there.
It's going to be a whole lot of ladies there.
So be clean. Yeah. Have your shoes shined up. Yeah. At least some business cards to pass around. All right. So... Now tell us about your CD.
CD Soul Samples is the name of it. 17 tracks. It is adult material. Most of it is. Some of it you can't, you know. And my kids listen to some of it.
Right.
but most of it is adult material. And it's basically, you got some street stories on there. You got love stories on there. You got, you know, inspirational life stuff. And that's why I call it Soul Samples, because it wasn't really coming from any particular direction, but just like a plethora of a whole lot of different, you know, a whole lot.
So everybody can identify with this
one. And even like the music that accompanies it is, you get a whole lot of, you got a blues, you got blues, you get, it's hip hop on there, it's,
you singing, go ahead and say you singing.
Singing is R&B, it's from everything.
And so you have the CD is available on cdbaby.com?
Yes, cdbaby.com.
Is there a /? In there anywhere? Look up Ism Dark?
Yeah, just Ism Dark.
Okay.
It'll take you to the page. If you want to go to a whole lot of different spoken word artists, just put in spoken word. It'll take you to a whole lot of different stuff. You can listen to it there, you know, and
check it out there.
And all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So, and if anyone else, I know they can contact you through blackpoetventures.com.
Or ismdark@hotmail.com, or call me.
All right. Anything else you want to, any more plugs you got going on? Because I'm all about plugging.
Let's see. What else is coming out? Just go to the website. If you go to the website will give you a whole lot of different
Black Poet Ventures, right?
Exactly.
And just, other poets.
Exactly. Not just on what I'm doing. It's a whole lot of different poets. Any poets out there that want to get their stuff on there, please hit us up. That's what we're about. We're trying to pull together everybody, make it an all-inclusive type thing. So we got showcases coming up and stuff like that that we want to get folks on.
Okay.
So,
and there's always something going on during the week. There's like there's an event, something on Sunday and Thursday.
Sunday
and
Night Divines.
Okay.
Wednesday, first and third Wednesdays at the studio at Marley's. Thursdays with Wisdom. Thursdays with Carolina Breeze.
Okay, and I think there's a calendar on blackpoetventures.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so people go check that out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on this hot winter day in Arizona in the park with an audience. So thank you, and thank everyone for listening.
All right. Thank you.
the beauty of your brownness, how the sun dresses your softness. I caress and contemplate on thoughts of us taking on each other's touch. I'm so intrigued by this, lured by the beauty of your brownness, how the sun dresses your softness. I caress and contemplate on thoughts of us taking on each other's touch. Said a song
How you doing? I'm missing the conversation and kissing of minds. And time had you flying, and you just passed me by. But your smile flashed me in the black with my confined, fixated eye. Was you just attracted to your physical beauty? But I dig the way your words flow so loosely, like your mind is working at ease. While others often say things to offend me and lie about your chocolate kiss. I'm so intrigued by this. Lured by the beauty of your brownness, how the sun dresses your softness. I caress and contemplate on thoughts of us taking on each other's touch. I'm so